Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning, and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about the top 10 financial planning points for furloughed feds. Say that three times fast. Anyway, to lead us in that discussion is Karen Schaefer, certified financial planner, co-founder, Schaefer Financial. Is that fair?
Exactly right.
Or are you the founder?
No. It's a team sport.
Sorry about that, Rick. Anyway, good morning, Karen.
Hey.
And Karen's also a seminar presenter with NITP and co-host Tammy Flanagan, senior benefit director, NITP. Seminar presenter, weekly GovExec columnist. Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, Karen and Bob.
And Tammy's been advising me on whether to take Social Security or not. So I listen
not
to y'all.
Not that you're eligible yet. That's 10
yeah,
years
thank
from
you,
now.
Thank you. Yeah, that much too young. All righty, Karen. Point number one, don't panic. Boy, what a great timing comment.
It's so true. I mean, I get it, too. People's lives have just been upended with this government closure. And then, of course, we have to worry about the debt ceiling. Come on. It's a real emotional time. But quite frankly, panicking never did help. So we need to take that collective exhale, another little cleansing breath, and realize that panic can often lead us to really bad behavior. And I think about all those people who in 2008 and early 2009 just couldn't take the stock market falling anymore, and they got out. And the problem is, when do you get back in? It never really feels good. So we just really have to admit that our job here is to deal with our personal financial plan, make sure that that's strong, and leave the politics and the positioning and the blustering to the politicians. We'll get through this. We've gotten through it before. It's not the first time. It's a little embarrassing. It's not our proudest moment, but no reason to panic.
Okay. Use the adrenaline for some better purpose.
Absolutely. Or maybe we just need to get into yoga.
There you go. Yeah, release the stress.
Release the stress.
I can't release mine anyway, but one place to release your stress is on our website. And the other one is Karen did a webinar on these 10 points. So you could not necessarily follow it along with today, but you could. Nice graphics. And especially there's one on when to get in and when to get out if you're hyper about getting out before the fall, if there's going to be a fall, and when to get back in. And Tammy's going to do a webinar, another month or so?
December
mm-hmm. on Social Security?
Yeah, of the strategies.
I'm getting excited. We've been talking about mm-hmm. that, but Tammy knows it. I don't. I just have some thoughts. And
Well, everybody has the same eight-year window from 62 to 70. And, you know, common practice in the past has always been to apply first opportunity because, you know, you never know how long you're going to live.
Sure.
And some people are afraid they won't get their money's worth. But I think today with people, you know, we all think that our normal life expectancy is about 83. So foregoing that bus coming down the road that you don't see or that dreaded illness, many of us will live to see 83 and beyond. So it does take it does pay to take some time to consider mm-hmm. when's the best time to apply.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest mistakes we're seeing that mm-hmm. people are just way underestimating how long they're going to live and how expensive it can be to be old and frail.
And
not even necessarily sick. You're just frail. You need a little help,
right.
And it gets expensive.
And for some people, when there's two of you, it's comfortable. But when it's down to one of you,
exactly
it can
right.
be a whole other story.
Yeah.
So we look at strategies for couples as
well.
Oh,
that'll be great.
Yeah,
that'll
so
be really
it should
good.
Be fun.
Okay, by the way, these webinars are free. They don't stay up forever because they sometimes can get dated, but they're free and you go on and listen to it now.
Mm-hmm.
There are no commercials on it mm-hmm. other than Karen's great ideas and
there
Tammy's great ideas. All right, so don't panic. But all the people at work are panicking and take a neurotic like me. I'm going to panic as much as I might listen. I won't do anything. But
well, that's really the... I think panic is a very human emotion, and just recognize it's there. But acting on the panic is really what we're trying to get people to avoid. So notice it's a serious situation. I mean, we can't ignore what's going on. People are going to have to make some adjustments to their personal finances. So alert now, and let's do something about it. So what we should what should we focus on instead of the panic?
Yeah,
that's
I
not
loved
enough.
Your tip number two, because that's the most practical thing is we have to refocus.
It's all about the cash,
the cash flow.
Yeah, so
because the cash flow might have been well in August, but today it may not be the same.
Yeah, and who'd have thought, you know, I'm not going to get a paycheck. So the very next thing I want people to do once we do the exhale cleansing breath is let's really focus on cash flow. And it's the classic Susie Orman mantra, really, do you know your needs and your wants? Everybody should be able to state, I need this much money no matter what coming in the door every single month or bad things happen. If I have more, then I start spending on my latte at Starbucks, you know, but what do I absolutely need to have? And if it's not coming in the door, how messy will this get? And start coming up with some strategies. But the other part of it is, really important if you have a significant other, if you have children, to really make sure you're not shouldering this one on your own. It's actually a problem in some families where parents don't want to worry the kids, or I don't want to fight with my partner about this stuff, so I'll just, you know, shoulder all this weight and stay up at night and keep moving the numbers around. And we need to do this together. We need to all be on the same team with this and find great ways to economize and have as little negative cash flow as we can as we wait for another paycheck.
Yeah, I think this is where online banking and online credit cards can come in real handy, because you can see very clearly, here's where my money went last month. Yep. Here's what I spent my credit card last month, and regroup.
Well, what I tell people is, let's just be honest, we've lost the skill to add and subtract, just the same way we've lost the skill to remember phone numbers. Those are gone, things of the past. So you need a spreadsheet or one of these more sophisticated tools. Some people like the Mint, MINT.com, where it's right there. As I have spent up to my limit, I'm getting a little text message saying I don't have to do data entry on how much did I spend today. And it's all current. So young people love that. People of a certain middle age who feel a little oogie about handing out passcodes will want to use something like Quicken, or just, for heaven's sakes, it's just do a little spreadsheet
notebook.
Yourself. You know, it works. But I like the spreadsheet because we can model it a little bit. If I go one more paycheck without getting any more money in, that means this is the ripple effect. And I'm not having to waste time on my arithmetic errors, which can be a problem now.
By the way, all this is on the website.
Yeah.
And as Karen talks and Tammy talks, there's an example of a spreadsheet. Mint.com is there and the like. So you might want to click on that, NITPINC.com. And you can follow us along, or just listen and then follow us along after the show. Yeah. Twice can't hurt.
So can't hurt at all. If your pre-retirement seminar was canceled this week, you can do this instead.
That's right. A few of them have been postponed.
Quite a few.
So the next thing we wanted people to do, though, is to be proactive with their creditors. It's obviously, if you don't have a paycheck coming in, even though you've been made aware that you're going to be able to get a paycheck eventually, that was, I guess, good news for everybody, but it doesn't really help the today. And so if you are going to have trouble paying your bills, do not wait and assume that your creditors understood what it meant to have the government furloughed and paychecks being delayed by a month or two. You've got to get on the phone with them and say, look, I can send you this much, or, you know, it 3 days after I get a deposit, you'll start to get something, and really, really be proactive with that. I would also, just like I would expect everybody to know what is their absolute gotta have it amount of money coming in the door, they should be able to calculate how messy this gets for them. What kind of a hole are they digging, so that we're not surprised and we know what to do with the money as soon as it does flow again.
In.
Yeah.
And your next slide, not to go there now, is explore lines of credit or sources of cash. But I don't want to go there until we've finished with slide three, if you will.
Well, because some people going into this might already have some debt issues or some credit issues.
Exactly.
And this just is going to compound
that's
them.
That's who always gets hurt. You know, the person who's been meaning to get around to some solid financial planning gets slapped with this. And it can really be a while. So I do understand that a lot of people with some credit card debt or with, you know, that got lots of different kinds of debt will be tempted to do some consolidating, because that's usually the first step in trying to take the negative effect of debt. Okay, let me look at what I have and what's the highest interest rate and let's start working on that. Or what's the smallest little one I can just clean up and feel good? There are different strategies for consolidating. But I always want to know before I would say to somebody, let's consolidate some debt at a lower interest rate with a more manageable monthly payment for you, why we had the debt. Because the worst thing we can do is pay off some debt and feel a little bit of relief. You know, we're paying off expensive debt with less expensive debt. And then what happens? It just comes right back. And then, of course, we'll feel so great when we finally get our paychecks again. And if we haven't really used this time to focus on where and why it got messy, it's just going to be a double nightmare a year from now.
I have a friend of mine who she's always robbing Peter to pay Paul because she's living paycheck to paycheck. But she told me recently that she saw this credit card offer that said 6 months free interest-free if you transfer your balance. She's like, oh, this is great. So she took her other credit card, transferred the balance over. And I told her, I says, well, what happens if you can't pay this off in 6 months? She goes, oh, well, then the interest starts. I said, I don't think so. Then the interest start you transfer it.
What happens is once they do start with the interest, if she has an outstanding balance in 6 months, it is very likely that they go back to the day one. Mm-hmm. And it's not welcome to the club low interest. It is, oh, let me poke you in the eye. And it can get as high as, I've seen it as high as 29.99%. So what she's really done for herself is figured out, I've got 6 months to
come up with the cash
to sell everything I don't love or need on eBay, to get a part-time job in addition to a full-time job, to rent out extra bedrooms, to sell body parts. All right, I didn't really say that last one. But I mean, really, it has to be a full court press, or she has just
dug a bigger hole.
Exactly. Have you ever done this? Now, I'm not a financial planner, but clients will come in and they have the credit card debt and they go, I can take a second trust out on the house and wipe out the credit card. And I said, well, what are you going to do with your credit cards? Well, I'll keep them. I said, no, throw them away. Otherwise, don't do that. It's better to pay 12% than to dig a hole. And
that's exactly right. So one of the strategies that's worked for me with people like your friend who are struggling with debt is let's just prove we've got a new attitude towards spending, and let's go 6 months or 12 months, and we actually see that once they stop spending, wow, this is actually kind of cool. It actually can start improving. Every once in a while, though, you meet somebody with debt and they have it for a real good reason. It wasn't the sloppy overspending or just unaware of what might, you know, the rest of us might anticipate needing to buy a new car. People with debt problems often are surprised they have to buy a new car, right? So we get them to think a little further down the road. But every once in a while, you do meet somebody who has this debt really through no fault of their own, in between jobs, no health insurance, or you know, doing a really good job with their money and no paycheck comes in, right? So those people, we can often do a little consolidating and help them out sooner than your friend who's very unaware of why she has the debt.
Mm-hmm. Right. Just kind of builds up slowly and all of a sudden you find yourself in a mess.
Yeah.
And how do you wean people off of consumption? We had an email from our prolific emailer, and it's great. I will not use the words. It says, you are not the... and therefore live within your means.
It's really, sadly, part of our culture. Our culture, our economy requires people to buy things they don't need at prices they can't afford with money they don't have. It's not a great model if you want to have personal, sound financial planning. So there's a new book out that we were talking about before we got started on this, and it's really, the studies are in that really do show us that abundance really just doesn't make you happy. So people who are spending on things are probably not getting any happier. When I see what a celebrity has, or when I want a bigger house, or when I want a bigger thing, I can go ahead and do that, but it won't necessarily make me happier. Money, it's easier. Life is easier with money. But the buying, the abundance of things is not good. So the name of the book is Happy Money, The Science of Smarter Spending. And clearly, being in control and not having to worry. You can be annoyed that the government's not giving you your paycheck right now, but it's not going to be a financial disaster for you because you know you don't have to spend money on a lot of things. You know you have all your basics covered every single month. And when you do spend money, your discretionary money, you're often spending it to be generous. People who are generous are happy people, or on experience, you know, taking the family on a wonderful once in a lifetime kind of trip, or creating an event for your loved ones or your family and friends. Those people are happy people. So there are ways to be smarter about spending your money. Acquiring things ain't going to do it for you.
Interesting you say that. I'll have to be a confessed spender up until 40 or 45. Yeah. Up until 40. And then I sat down with myself once. Maybe I just met you two.
and said self.
And I said, self, how many shirts do you really need? How many pairs of shoes do you really need?
Yeah. And you're so beyond need at that point in your life. Yeah.
And then I go, I get it.
Yeah.
And when you move a few times and you realize how much stuff you accumulate, it's like, what a waste of money.
Right.
And then you have to move it or store it or something. Yeah.
There's give it away. There's all of that.
And the cost to move the stuff. Anyway.
Okay, so we have point number four. And point number four was just explore what your lines of credit really are. And because people really are sadly going to have to go into debt for this. And in a personal financial plan, we just can't have the Treasury print some more money. We're going to have to deal with it. There are lots of financial institutions that are making loans to furloughed feds to bridge them here.
Well, you can also take a loan from your TSP. So what are your comments on TSP loan?
And if you'll archive this and destroy the tape, anybody who knows Karen Schaefer knows it's very painful for me to say this, but yes, you can borrow from your thrift savings plan. And it is much better to do that than it would be to take a distribution. So people have different pockets of money. And, you know, if I've been saving in a pretty good fashion for retirement, I've got money in IRAs or my former employer's 401k plan, and I'm not getting a paycheck now, there's an awful lot of people who are going to be tempted to take a distribution. I got to deal with today. I'm going to be late on my mortgage, right? But if I take a distribution from one of my qualified retirement plans, not only do I have to pay all the tax, there goes at least 30% for most people, I'm probably going to face a penalty unless I've reached a certain middle age. And people who are struggling are probably not at that age right now.
Yeah, with the TSP, you can't contribute for 6 months once you've done that.
So it's just a horrible, horrible mess that will haunt you for an awfully long time. So what I would like people to understand that if they're really feeling like their lines of credit aren't going to be able to wipe out whatever hole we had to dig while the government was shut down, maybe just transferring other money into thrift, transfer that traditional IRA in, transfer that former employer's 401k into that. And then once we see what's going on here, take a little as possible out of my thrift savings plan as a loan and have it paid back paycheck to paycheck, you know, automatically.
For some people, be putting some interest back as a G fund.
It won't be very much. It'll definitely be something you pay for the rest of your life, which I hate. But if we really need to, that's going to be a possibility. That's why before you really think about taking money from thrift, you should really know how much of a hole will I be digging here, and how likely is it I could just get it paid back in a couple of years. For some people, if we just get them a couple thousand dollars and then the money starts flowing again, they'll be fine. That's not, to me, thrift loan kind of money. That's okay. Maybe a little personal loan at the credit union or wherever you do your banking. There, you know, my personal bank sent out something that to help feds come and talk to us, and they'll set up a little program. I also, though, like the idea of intrafamily loans. Now, granted, you got to have the right family, but if you've got any family member of a certain senior age, their money sitting in cash earning 0.0. If you go to get a personal loan, even with good credit, it's not going to be probably less than 6 or 7%, right? So let's split the difference with Great Aunt Sophie and offer 3%, get it paid back in 1 year, do automatic out of your checking account into her checking account, make it, you know, there's all kinds of amortization schedules up on websites. I like those. Mm-hmm. Do a little intra-family loan for
as
those.
As long as you set it up legitimately.
It has to be set up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you do have to, you know, you run the risk of having to listen to the lecture, you know, you can't handle your money. Or we all have family members. We shouldn't be talking about money, you know, with them. But I personally can think of hundreds of clients for whom this would be just a great idea. Just do a little intra-family loan, better than taking a loan out of thrift, better than paying a mediocre or lousy interest rate to some corporate lender, and get it done.
Interesting you say that. I think 2 weeks ago we got an email, Tammy, somebody had taken money out of their IRA in this situation, and you know what's the tax going to be? And I think we responded, well, it's not only the tax, it's the penalty. Yeah. And it was a chunk of change, so that the net was probably a little bit more than half of what was taken out, when that money could have been, like you say, transferred into the thrift, and then if you had to borrow it back out.
Right. I still think there's a lot of people who just don't realize when you take money out of the TSP, it's never been taxed. Because I'll have people who will tell me, oh, did you hear when you take a distribution of your thrift, there's a 20% penalty. I'm like, it's not a 20% penalty. They're helping you by prepaying your taxes.
Right.
That may not be all you owe.
And there will be more next April.
That's
right. Yeah. It's hard to remember that. If that's not what you do for a living, and you just signed up for your thrift and you've been pretty good about it, knowing that you better ask a few questions before you take a distribution is imperative to make avoiding mistakes.
And there is a good publication right on TSP.gov that's called Important Tax Information About Your TSP Distribution.
Yeah.
Read it.
It's one of those things that you love people to be a little intuitive. When it comes to taxes, you know, nothing's free. So if everybody knows that their contributions aren't being taxed currently. So just, you know, intuitively, that you should be looking for that other shoe to drop. Go to tsp.gov. It's great advice, Tammy. Yeah.
Okay, Tammy, with regards to distributions from the thrift, is it 59 and a half or over, you can take a one-time partial?
Yeah, there is an age-based distribution where you could, once you're 59 and a half, even if you're still employed, you can ask for this one-time withdrawal. And that's money that you don't pay back, but you will pay tax on it unless you withdraw it to transfer it to an IRA, which means you're not spending it.
And then the other is, I don't think there's a provision to take monthly payments at 59 and a half while on the job.
Unless you're retired.
Right, unless you're retired. Okay, just.
Right. But so then the question is, would that be a good idea? Just go ahead and take a distribution out of my thrift if I'm 60 years old and I've dug a hole there. And what I always look at is, okay, now wait a minute. Taking a distribution means you've given up all the growth on that. And it's been my experience when you're talking to people about their money and we're getting to a certain age where this might be, you know, my last few years on the job, that distribution will never be replaced.
You so, don't have enough time.
You know, and if you're in your early 60s, you're past 59 and a half, and you're starting to deplete assets already, but then you're one of those people who lives to be 80, 85, 90, 102, you're going to rue the day that you didn't tighten it up a little bit. You know, let's just do without for a year or so and pay off the debt as opposed to depleting assets. It's one of the, it makes people nervous. If you've always seen your money growing, you know, I have a little bit more money today than I did last year because I had more money in thrift and more money in this and my mortgage is a little smaller. Those trends stop once you retire. Right. The accumulation stops. And now you look at that. I got to make this last forever.
Well, for a lot of people, this could be a wake up call because you always hear, and I'm sure you tell your clients too, to have a cash reserve in the event of something like this very thing that happens.
Yes.
So some of the people who are listening may have that cash reserve panicking right now. But if you don't, that's a good thing to think about when things do recover.
Exactly right.
How do you get somebody to grasp that thought process and embrace it? In other words, the younger you are, maybe the less you're going to pay attention to that. But midway through, if I take X today, I'm going to be without X tomorrow without the growth. How do you do that with graphs? I mean, people love graphs.
Well, you know, it's funny. My experience has been everybody's a little different with that. Some people really do we just call them savers. My husband Rick and I work together, you know, we just say, well, you know, you're savers, so you're going to be fine. Some people have to be taught to save, and what gives people incentive is very different. Some people just want somebody to say, hey, you're doing a great job. Other people need to see it in a graph. Other people need to be scared into really bad things will happen to you if you don't take charge of this. Other people need to build in little rewards. So we don't do all the saving for something that is so far down the road. I can't really imagine it. But we save for something that in 2 years, how about we plan for a really nice trip while we do this and sort of balance it. So that's what makes personal financial planning so much fun. It's personal.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we do is my husband has a separate credit union account at work. So he'll have money from his paycheck go to that account, which to me, that account doesn't exist.
Right. Because you don't see it.
It's there and it's growing, but you know, I don't consider it as anything part of our monthly spending.
And that actually helps an awful lot of people. If you plan to spend this much every month between your housing and your insurances and all of the routine stuff and plan to save, just, you know, it doesn't even have to have a specific goal, but I don't want to be spending anything so that I have some flexibility. And then if there's leftover after that, well, then you can actually be spontaneous. Hey, right. You know, we can go do some lovely dinners out this month, or we can spoil the kids a little bit this month, or we can be generous with something that we're really enjoying. And yet the plan stays on track because you didn't even see the money.
Right.
Right. Great.
Okay. What number are we on?
Well, we already kind of talked about number five, don't take distribution. So cutting back on contributions is a question that I actually get quite frankly more than anything else. If people are really, really struggling, should they just cut back on what they're putting into thrift? And that's another one that I hate to say out loud, but the answer from the financial planner's point of view is, of course, we can't do everything at once. So if we weren't really in great financial shape as we stopped getting our paychecks, maybe what we need to do is cut back a bit. But I would never cut back without having an idea of when I can go back. Right. So again, it's the same idea, Tammy, where I'm planning to save. I just know I can't spend all of my paycheck. So I'm going to cut back on my contributions to thrift until the first of the year. I'm going to cut back on my contributions to thrift until I've been able to pay off this $2,000 of personal line of credit that I had to take when we didn't have a paycheck. Don't forget, though, that if you are going to cut back on your thrift a little bit, you're going to pay more in taxes than you were expecting to pay. And you may have to adjust your withholdings so that come next April, if I hadn't put in as big a contribution in 2013, I don't then have to scramble to pay my income taxes on that next year.
So, your graphs on this, for those of you all that should be watching this after the show or during the show, there's three graphs there to just, if you continue with it or if you pull back out and then get back in, the delta.
And you can, and by the way, these graphs were really just playing with the thrift website where they've got a really great tool on the TSP.gov website where you can see, you know, if somebody somehow just managed to keep putting money into thrift, even on a pretty typical federal government, not SES level or big deal level income, these people are going to get close to $1 million thrift accounts. But if they stopped contributing because, you know, we did have a furlough and there were no paychecks, I mean, that is a pretty good reason, I suppose. Boy, they'll pay for that for the rest of their life. What they'll be able to accumulate can be cut in half. And then if you look at the webinar, we've got another graph that showed, okay, I stopped for a while and then I got back in and I claw my way back to, hey, it's still a pretty impressive number. So it really would be important to, if you have to cut back, at least all you FERS folks, make sure you're getting your matching. I just insist. Nobody cuts back to less than 5%. And then maybe by the first of the year, I can get back up to 7 or 8%. And then when the car note's done, I'll jump on it. Or as soon as this little personal loan that I had to take is done, we'll jump back on it. And I also know that little incremental steps to get back to where you were makes way more sense than saying, oh my gosh, I was putting in the max and now I had to go down to 5%. And, you know, a big, big contribution back to thrift just doesn't seem easy. Of course it doesn't. So don't wait. Do a little one. And before you know it, you'll be back on track.
Yeah. And when the participation rate did dip in the TSP was in right after the 2008 crash.
Yeah.
It went from a high of 88% of the FERS participants FERS employees were participating down to 81%. It was a pretty significant drop. But shortly thereafter that, it went back up. And, mm-hmm. and right now, it's still at a pretty nice 87% participation.
I think what happened in 2008 was just so out of the blue for so many people that it was a real panic. I felt fear coming off people. And, you know, when you pull the curtain back and just see how Wall Street really works, and when you see that this is around the world and it's instant, I can understand that the knee-jerk reaction was to stop contributing, but it was probably the best time ever to contribute.
Right.
Everything's on sale. Hello. Right. So we just have to, it was another one of those lessons we learn. Panic is a real thing, but don't act on the panic. If you really don't need this money, this is a long-term investment, and the prices are low, have at it. Mm-hmm. Jump in. Keep it going.
A lot of people are afraid it's not
going to
recover.
So if the market were to drop currently, if it were, I'm not saying that it is.
Well, it will. We just don't know when.
Okay.
It started low today. Go ahead.
I stay the course, mm-hmm. but I don't pull out of the, other than the G funds. I stay there mm-hmm. because I'm buying low. I'm buying on sale. I can buy another shirt.
Yeah. Stop that. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other interesting statistic that the TSP had out was that a little over half of all participants in FERS save at 5 or 6% of their paycheck or less. So in order to cut back, they would be cutting into their matching government contributions.
Oh, Tammy, that's breaking my heart.
Yeah.
So we need to work on increasing. Our work is not done.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, we still need education here.
I've started to, you know, with NITP, we do so many retirement classes, but there are a couple of agencies that have hired us to do the orientation classes for their new folks. And I
wish we did all of them.
I do, too. I just love that because these are people, for the most part, not everybody starting with the federal government, but a lot of these orientation classes, not only are they starting with the federal government, they're pretty much starting their careers. And when you say you have got to put in the maximum to thrift as soon as possible, so maybe they can't do it the first year or two on the job, but I can show them numbers that if by the time you're 30, you're putting in the maximum, I'm going to leave you alone. Mm-hmm. Spend your paycheck, and I'll catch you again at 50, mm-hmm. and we'll do that catch-up. Because somebody who avoids a problem with debt and maxes on the thrift plan, they have beautiful retirements.
Yeah, they can retire at a young age.
Oh, my gosh.
And even FERS?
Oh, yeah, absolutely FERS.
Absolutely.
More so FERS, actually.
Okay, well, let's do this. We've not opened the phone lines.
Oh, my.
And
okay.
I bet there's some questions out there. 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. Ask a question of Karen, Tammy, or even me.
Taxes, finance, and benefits. We got all three bases here.
Okay. So in the meantime, how about if we do number seven?
Number seven sounds good.
Number seven. What I meant by number seven, I said know what assets you can use to cover any shortfall. So clearly, most people assume they're going to have to take debt. But we do meet people who might be better off liquidating some assets to cover this debt. You know, there are people who have these little piles of savings bonds that they just bought payroll deduction because their supervisor was the bond chairperson. And it's kind of like your money over there mm-hmm. that comes out of your husband's paycheck, Tammy. Right. It's just kind of money that's, well, hello, that's what this kind of money is for. We've got a little mess here. We're paying some interest. Let's just sell the asset and go ahead and take care of it. But also, I don't know how many people watch the stock market. We've had 5 pretty darn good years in a row. And if it looks like between digging out of the furlough mess and maybe having to buy a car next year and, you know, kind of think like a planner, go down the road, we might need some more money, it might be a better time to be coming out of the stock market today than to wait for the next 2 years to play out, mm-hmm. which is not the same as me saying I have any crystal ball here. Knowing that everybody needs to sell. This is just the handful of people who may, in the next year or two, be wanting to spend money. We know we have some pretty good prices right now if you have an asset that's invested in stock. Hopefully not your thrift plan or retirement accounts, but people who bought some stuff, maybe like the college money. College money's in the market, got the high school kid. You don't want to be kicking yourself on that and saying, oh, I wish I would have been selling in 2013 when, in spite of all the crazy rhetoric, the market was holding. And then it took a pause and stepped back a little bit. So it kind of goes hand in hand with number eight, which is rethink your short-term allocations. You kind of brought it up, both of you, with people are supposed to have emergency money, just in case money. And the way I've always thought about that is instead of just having a miscellaneous pile of money in case I have an emergency, let me really have money for the things that really are going to happen. And then if I have an emergency, some of those things that really are going to happen, like vacations, and you can just manipulate that a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. So because the markets are high and because people are accumulating debt without their paychecks right now, it's making me rethink our definition of short term. Might want to push that out just a little further to add more flexibility.
Yeah. Okay. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So we move on to, oh, this is the fun one, asset allocation.
Yeah. So we had an email come in earlier this week, and it was an asset allocation kind of question. Hello, NITP. I'd loved that. Mm-hmm. That I guess that's us. Okay. Yep. Hello, NITP. I've got 7 years of federal service. I'm currently in the L fund, but wanted at the beginning of the year to move to the CS&I funds. Those are all the stock funds, and put 60% into C, 20% into the other two. My question is, how do I go about rebalancing the funds? Well, that's actually a great question, but there are a couple of pieces of information that are missing here before we know how to answer it. So, you know, let's just back it up and make it a, so how do we rebalance this? And if I'm sitting at home and furloughed, should I be thinking about rebalancing my thrift plan? The way anybody should be allocating their money is primarily on timeframes. So a lot of people usually start with the, I love this, I hate that, or I don't like to take risk. I don't like to take risk either, but I drive the Beltway regularly.
There's risk in every decision you make.
So, you know, this is all about managing risk. And the best way to manage risk is to keep in mind the number one rule of successful asset allocation. We keep our short-term money out of the market and we put our long-term money in the market. We've always drawn the line at about 5 years. So if I think I'm going to need money in the next 5 years, that's G fund money, right? Cash. That's the only out of the market. If I need a little more flexibility in my plan because furlough is wreaking havoc with what used to be working for me, maybe make that a little bit longer than just the 5 years. But everything else has to be in the market. Or we're going to start losing, we're taking too much risk of inflation and taxes eating up the worth of whatever we've been saving so diligently. So if I met somebody that said they wanted an L fund, it would be because once we got the allocation right, the right amount of money's in the market, the right amount of money's out of the market, they just don't like to rebalance. Mm-hmm. If somebody's saying, I'm in an L fund, but I want to be a do-it-yourselfer, it's because they're willing to rebalance on their own, and they really don't need much of any money in the G and the F funds. The L funds are going to have a little bit of money in all five funds. Do-it-yourselfers often skip or really go light on G and F, the action for growth, long-term money. It's your thrift money, right? For most people, it is long-term money. It's going to be in CS&I, but you got to rebalance them because the C fund, more conservative, all too big to fail kind of companies than the S and the I. And if you don't rebalance, you end up drifting into a more aggressive portfolio. And hello, what happened in 2008? Markets drop. And the more aggressive ones really drop take your harder. Breath away. Yeah. Really take your breath away.
So let's take a last week we were fortunate enough to have Greg Long and Kim Weaver from the Thrift Board. Greg is the director. and Greg talked, and we talked about this. Let's just take a look at the C Fund, and correct me if I'm wrong. It's 500 of the biggest U.S. mm-hmm. companies, right. correct?
Right.
So,
which
if you,
last I heard makes up 75% of the U.S. economy in those 500 companies.
Yeah. But some people will say, well, why don't we have this sector fund or that sector fund? Well, the sector funds are made up of stocks. Now, there are 500 of them in the C fund, but there's 4,500 of them in the S fund. These are big
all
companies.
US companies. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times a sector fund will be represented by what's in either or both of these other two. I'm not going to say
be.
All the time.
Right. Right. So here's why people get interested in sector funds. When they're making the news, they're often
hot.
Really hot. And what happens with the S&P 500 in particular compared to the S fund is if you're going to be one of the largest companies in the U.S., we have a tendency to have all kind of the same thing. All the banks, all the insurance companies, all the, you know, auto industry, everything, there will be a there'll be less variety of industries in the S&P 500 than we could get in smaller ones. So you see this, a particular sector that's not represented in the big guys screams up and is really exciting, right? So people want that. But what you also have to look at is a sector fund. It, like, think pharmaceuticals is just the classic example. Every once in a while, you know, it's the hottest place to be. And every once in a while, it is so not fun to be in pharmaceuticals. Well, if I'm in the S&P 500 or the S fund with 4,500 mid-size and a few small companies in there, I got some pharmaceuticals without taking the risk of having to really know when to play that card and when not to. So as a financial planner, as somebody who actually does make investment decisions on a day-to-day basis, we would only be putting sector funds in if, while I'm on a radio show, somebody else is watching the market today, right? They're really pretty volatile. Not for the, I got a full-time job, I got a full-time life, this is my long-term money, and I look at it, every once in a while,
yeah,
right?
No,
not
going to work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Too much risk.
Great time for a pause for a question. Good morning.
Good morning. This is about the Washington Post Today's Edition. How does she feel about the Social Security and other payments being that could be halted?
You know, I was reading that article as I was supposed to be getting in my car to come to the studio. And so first, what you have to understand is that Karen Schaefer personally has absolutely no sway over whether or not they're going to get checks or not. And I did find that article to be pretty alarming, trying to go through, if we really don't raise the debt ceiling, at what point do we run out of money in every single pocket of money and not be able to do those checks? So I agree that that would be a horrible mess if the Social Security checks were delayed. I don't believe that that's really going to happen. I do think we're going to get an agreement on this just because it's a little too much crazy land around the world not to do it. But if we were to have to really say the debt ceiling didn't get raised and Social Security checks are delayed, it's kind of like everybody goes on furlough. They'll be made whole eventually, but everybody goes on furlough for a day or two.
I don't want to sound any less, but it's delayed. It's not paid. But for somebody, and they made, I think, some reference in that article about how many people live on this.
Mm-hmm.
Delayed is real bad.
Oh, it says, under the most alarming scenarios, as soon as Friday payments to Medicare, Medicaid providers, unemployment, Social Security, and other refund checks would be postponed 1 to 4 days, which for some people, 1 to 4 days means I can't buy groceries.
Right.
But so, they would still come eventually.
So let's practice what we're preaching here. I read that article and thought, are you trying to make people panic? This is not helpful. Okay. I mean, this is factual, and I guess we'll report the news. But it does not help to panic, and I really don't think that that will get anybody to a good financial decision. So
that's one scenario out of probably 30 they discussed. And this is the worst case scenario.
This is absolutely the worst case scenario. And it does mean delay. So I, in any personal financial plan, I should have enough money to get through. What if I got sick? What if I got disabled? What if, you know, some Yahoo coming through a red light totaled my car and I have a big copay on that? if I'm not in a good situation, then clearly we have to go back to points, you know, 2 through 6, explore my lines of credit, get my family members on the same team with me and all of that.
Tammy, when do Social Security checks come out? Do they all come out at the same date?
No, they're staggered based on your birthday. So some people will get their check on the 1st of the month. Some will get on the 15th of the month. So they have a staggered schedule. And the reason I heard for that was so that the phone lines aren't taxed. Because usually that when that check comes in, for some reason, it caused a lot of people to contact Social Security. Or I guess if the check didn't come in,
that's right.
Yeah. They would contact Social. So this will stagger those phone calls throughout the month.
Okay. Did these comments help, sir? Go on.
He might have just listened. Yeah.
I hope he wasn't.
He went back and sell his car and sell his.
But we could go back to our conversation about these L funds too, because what I was just talking about in general was asset allocation. To bring that down specifically to the L funds, the L funds really use all 5 of our thrift funds, but rebalance every day automatically at no extra cost to the participant.
Can you define rebalance?
Yes, I can.
Please.
Happy to help you with that one. So if the idea is I want to allocate my money among and between these 5 funds, sometimes I only use 3 of them, to meet my needs, every single day, those funds do whatever they do. They don't all gain, stay flat, or lose at the same pace. So from time to time, if I had said, like our email question, she wanted eventually to be 60% C, 20% in S&I. Well, on good days, S&I can outperform the C fund. And if we've had 5 good years in a row, I might, if I don't ever rebalance, have 70% in S&I and only 30% in C. Well, anybody looking at that says, wow, that's kind of aggressive. And yet I didn't want to be aggressive. Yeah, I wanted to have most of my money in the conservative growth. That's what the C fund stands for, right? Conservative growth fund. So I, from time to time, need to rebalance that so that if my money is drifting into a more aggressive portfolio, I do a little interfund transfer, take the excess out of my big performers and put it back into, it's just a little interfund transfer, my C fund so that I stay at the 60-20-20. It's one of those things that more often than not, if you're going to be a do-it-yourselfer, you're not going to use an L fund, you're going to look at your positions and go, fine, no action needed, but you have to look at it. We used to just tell people, look at it once a quarter, and if you've drifted a little bit from your target allocation, in this example, 60-20-20, tighten it up with interfund transfers. Always have the new money going according to your preferred allocation, but just look at it about once a quarter. Now we say, look at it once a quarter and during big life events. Furloughed is a big life event. And on big market days. I mean, sometimes we get these big, huge market days. But remember, do-it-yourselfers, if you're not using an L fund, when the market dropped, it means woo-hoo, you're buying on sale. It doesn't mean, oh, that was fun, but now I don't like that anymore. I've got a whole different idea in my allocations.
Yeah, buy low, sell high.
Right. So then the final point I would make to somebody who is in an L fund, there's 5 different L funds. I don't know which one you're in. So going from the L income fund or the L 2020 fund, that's mostly cash. Mm-hmm. Going into the market, if you were really going to just be in CS&I, wow, that's like the 2050 fund. I'd take a year to get there. I would be going slowly into the market. I'd have all my new money go the way I wanted it. That's, you know, different. But the money I already have in the thrift plan, if it's mostly in cash now and I want it longer term in the market, I would probably once a month move a bit. We get a big market drop, move a big bit, right? Mm-hmm. But I can't overemphasize how tough it is to stay the course when you've moved all your money into the market and then the market tanks, right? It's one thing to say it. It's one thing to acknowledge it academically. It's another thing when your money used to be this big number and now it's a fraction of that big number, you really lose faith in your ability to do this.
And also if she's in the L income fund, yeah, and she wants to go see S&I, do the same thing. Do it slowly over
exactly
6 months.
That's exactly my point.
So whether
Tammy,
you're going in or out.
Right.
Don't.
Well, coming out, if you actually has a reason that just came up, I don't mind you just moving out.
But I am
not a fan of drama when it comes to investment decisions. You know, the panic move, the I love this, I hate that. Those are the folks who really
can suffer.
Really shoot themselves in the foot with investment decisions.
What was the real large market drop? Not 2008. There was one 500-point day that the market dropped five. This is a while ago.
Well, we've had many in my career. Pick one. You
this
know,
was the worst I'd ever been around.
There was one shortly after the TSP started because our
1987. Oh, October-ish. Yes, we still call that Black Monday. And it was one of those things where the markets were up 40% year to date. Stock market was up in September of 1987 over 40%. And it was one of those irrationally exuberant, before Greenspan coined that term, kind of times. It would might have been a time to say, yikes, what's going on here? But it dropped and came back by November. And yet, I think we've all met people who watched it drop, got out, and then it never felt all that exciting. You know, the markets were going up, but you'd almost have to look at it to say, did we make any money this year? I met people in the mid-90s who had been out since 1987.
I met somebody very smart, and I thought he was crazy. He went in the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
I learned.
Yeah.
It only took me.
But the funny thing about that time was in April was when the TSP started up.
Yes.
That's when the engines got started. And everybody was like, look at the stock market. So as much as they could, and they were very restricted for good reason to putting all their money in the C fund, but as much as they could, they were putting it in. And then when that happened and they saw what can happen when you're, because what did we know about investing in the stock market as government employees in the early 80s? That's when everybody pulled out and got stuck to the G fund. And
exactly.
I think some people have stayed with it ever since.
Exactly right.
Okay, we come about full circle here. Andrew's given us the almost 1 minute sign. And Karen, are we back to number one? Don't panic.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of stay the course. I mean, through all of these bad times, what we find is that solid financial planning really does weather these storms pretty nicely. The people who are just going to be annoyed or maybe even embarrassed by what's happened with the furlough and now the debt ceiling debate, we won't even notice anything in their personal financial plans. They're going to be fine. People who really do get hurt by this, it's just another wake-up call. We've got to take charge of our money and then stay focused on financial planning. I always say, once I get you organized, updating it once a year is all it's going to take to keep us on course. So I'm going to encourage you to use your time off to get your plan in order.
Tammy?
I was going to say exactly that same thing. You have some extra time on your hands this week. Take the time to listen to the webinar and do the spreadsheet.
Listen to the webinar, and we got to get off because we don't have any more time. Thank you, and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.